Senator Lindsey Graham died at 71 after a sudden illness, and the immediate political implications are significant. Graham was one of the most versatile political operators in the Republican Party, a man who had been a fierce critic of Donald Trump in 2016, then one of his most loyal defenders, and whose death removes a voice that, whatever you thought of him, understood how to navigate the gap between hardliners and pragmatists on foreign policy. His absence from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at a moment when the U.S. is conducting military operations in the Gulf is particularly notable.
The South Carolina governorship is Republican, so the seat stays red, but the institutional knowledge and relationships Graham had built over decades, especially on military and intelligence matters, don't transfer to a successor automatically. Senate experience compounds in ways that appointment can't replicate. His death comes as Mitch McConnell is approaching a full month hospitalized, with work crews renovating his D.C. home and CNN publicly distancing itself from commentator Scott Jennings's claim that he had spoken with the senator. The Senate's senior Republican leadership is in genuinely fragile shape right now.
The McConnell situation carries its own political weight. CNN's decision to put out a statement saying Jennings's account of speaking with McConnell is not CNN reporting is an extraordinary move. News organizations rarely call out their own contributors that directly. It suggests either that Jennings made claims about the senator's condition or statements that the network couldn't verify, or that someone close to McConnell pushed back hard enough that CNN felt the need to draw a clear line. Either way, the opacity around McConnell's health has become a story in its own right.
On the Democratic side, James Carville, the veteran strategist who helped elect Bill Clinton and has been a relentless critic of the party's progressive wing, publicly accused far-left primary winners of undermining Democratic chances in the midterms by targeting moderate incumbents rather than focusing energy on defeating Republicans. This is the argument that has consumed Democratic internal politics for roughly a decade now. And it's sharpening, because the stakes of the 2026 midterms are real. Democrats see a potential path to a Senate majority, but need to hold and flip seats in states where far-left nominees would likely lose general elections.
The New York City piece fits here as well. Mayor Mamdani, the Democratic socialist who won the mayoral race earlier this year, is now sidestepping questions about the Plattner scandal and whether his movement's vetting process failed. The fact that he's declining to engage substantively suggests his team calculated that any direct answer creates more problems than it solves. But Carville's point is that these kinds of governance stumbles in high-profile progressive administrations become ammunition in the broader debate about electability and competence.
Kamala Harris's essay calling on Democrats to grow a backbone on voting rights adds another layer. She's specifically warning about redistricting after the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, which is the kind of structural electoral issue that can compound for a decade before the political consequences become undeniable. The fact that Harris is writing essays rather than leading a political operation suggests she hasn't decided what her next institutional role is, but she's clearly positioning herself as a voice on civil rights and democratic participation.
The FBI director Kash Patel being called to the White House amid spending scrutiny, combined with The Guardian's reporting on DHS staff facing six-hour polygraph sessions and intimidation, paints a picture of executive branch management culture that raises real questions about institutional stability. Six-hour polygraphs for Homeland Security staff aren't normal internal oversight. That's either a response to genuine security concerns or a loyalty testing mechanism, and the distinction matters a great deal for how career professionals in those agencies respond.
The Kansas ballot amendment to elect Supreme Court justices directly, driven by frustration over abortion rulings, is worth watching as a bellwether. Kansas has been a surprising indicator of shifting political sentiment before. It was the first state to vote against a post-Dobbs abortion restriction in a referendum. If voters there approve a constitutional change to elect justices, it signals that the pressure on the judiciary from populist impulses isn't limited to the federal level. Meanwhile, the Michigan GOP governor's race dispute, and the Hunter Biden defamation verdict, $1.7 million from a former Overstock CEO, are stories that will generate heat this week without necessarily generating much light.